BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. So today I have great pleasure of introducing Faye Edwards, who is a dermatology clinical nurse specialist in Edinburgh up in Scotland. So welcome today, Faye. And also today we're going to be concentrating on hidradenitis suppurativa. I recently listened to Faye at a BDNG conference in Harrogate. She was presenting there for the very first time and I was actually blown away how fantastic she was. So I grabbed her quickly and her knowledge on dressings is absolutely fantastic. So I thought she'd be absolutely ideal for a podcast. So today we're really going to be concentrating on HS and the dressings and how Faye goes about her clinical services. So Faye, could you tell me how you first of all got introduced into HS world? What was your interest?
So not long after I qualified, I started working on a surgical ward. And really, when I qualified, I wanted to work in sort of burns and plastics.
Yeah.
So I ended up on a surgical ward that we did a lot of sort of fairly complex plastic surgeries and reconstructive surgeries. So my introduction to HS was actually the surgical side of things, where right. I was seeing patients following sort of wide local excisions, and we were doing sort of the negative pressure wound therapy following that. And throughout a lot of my career, I thought HS was this horrible disease that the only treatment for it was these massive excisions that weren't really that useful because, it's going to come back eventually. And then after sort of traveling around for a little while and trying a few different sort of jobs and working a few different areas, I've ended up in dermatology, which turns out I really love. And it's been really good learning the sort of the inflammatory side of skin, having sort of wound care and the plastics side of managing skin. Then I was sort of reintroduced to HS from the other angle of how can we actually tackle it from an inflammatory and dermatological point of view. So I try in my practice to sort of combine the two elements of my career. And I think that's been my route into sort of making myself the HS specialist. Trying to add up the two sides of it.
Yeah, it's great that you've got the sort of surgical background of HS as well, and to have that keen interest. And I know even a few years ago, we had so limited treatments for HS and it was a real struggle. And I think it's really, it's coming forward all the time, but I think, now clinicians are really excited about working with HS patients and, we have got some treatments out there for them, which is really positive. So do you run a nurse sort of led or sort of work with your consultant with an HS clinic? How does it work in Edinburgh?
So at the moment, we don't actually have a HS service. It is something I am actively working on at the moment. We've been struggling to find a consultant who sort of has the time and the capacity to take on a sort of a whole HS clinic. But we've just got a new consultant who said she's keen to work with me. Watch this space. I'm currently working on it. But I basically, every consultant I meet and every doctor I meet, I will tell them I am obsessed with HS and I want your HS patients essentially. And I've said that if they've got any patients who they feel just need sort of that sort of nursing input and the sort of bit more time, the more practical side of things, and not just try this drug. I've told them to send them my way. And basically I've started just introducing myself to patients as the HS specialist nurse. because I think it's currently the best that we've got. But hopefully we will have a service within the year.
Fingers crossed. And I think it's so positive even for a patient to hear that, you know, HS specialist nurse, because it gives that patient confidence in, oh my goodness, there's a clinician that's interested. Because as we know, on average, it can take about 10 years for a patient even to be diagnosed with HS, you know, and education was very, very limited in the past. And our treatments were very limited as well. And, you know, we still have patients cycling through lots and lots of different antibiotics and treatments as well. So it can be very, very traumatic for our HS patients, and misdiagnosis, isn't it? It happens all the time. I think education is definitely the way forward for our, you know, and try to get the message across there. And before we go into your amazing specialty with dressings, I just want to address the idea that we have now got H skin and we do our MDT, and that we had one ran from London recently, a national one. And I just got an email today saying there's now a Scottish HS inflammatory MDT, which is really positive, isn't it?
Yeah, I got that email too. It's really
exciting. I saw your
exciting.
Name on the list. Yeah, so I have put down to join that. So again, it's people from all over the country really trying to join together and connect and, you know, sort of discuss complex cases or even, you know, standard cases and have that shared passion on HS, which, you know, we're really fortunate. We do meet people up and down the country that have this specialty. So it's moving forward, Faye. It's definitely moving forward.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a bit. It feels a bit too late, but it's exciting that it's finally getting somewhere and that we're finally, you know, treating these patients the way they deserve to be treated.
Absolutely, and they deserve it. And you know, it's quite often the words I will say as well, because they're so desperate the time they get to you. You know, especially in secondary, and you know, it means a lot to be heard, doesn't it? And that we're there for them as well. So let's bounce forward. We're not going to be discussing treatments specifically today. We're going to be talking about dressings. And I think dressings can be a real, real difficulty, actually obtaining dressings, and B, obtaining dressings that actually work correctly for our patients. And sadly, we still see patients coming in with sanitary towels or using, underwear or I've seen all different types of aspects of trying to, you know, prevent the seepage from the wounds. And as we know with HS as well, we also, so they get the exudate, but, you know, sometimes it can be the odour as well, which concerns the patient. So how do you go about it, Faye? How, when you have a patient in front of you and they require certain dressings, how do you discuss that with the patient? How do you miraculously obtain these dressings?
I mean, that last question is a difficult one. I would always start by asking a patient what they are currently using, because sometimes they will tell me I'm using XYZ dressing, and my next question will always then be, and you know, does that work for you? You know, are you happy using that dressing? Sometimes they'll say yes, and I'll think that's a rubbish dressing. I wouldn't choose that. But actually they're like, no, it works fine. My skin isn't getting traumatized. It holds the drainage in and it stays on all day. That's all I want. And I'm not going to mess with that. I might show them a few similar things and say, you know, you can try this. But yeah, I'm not, you know, at the end of the day, the people that I'm seeing have to live with the sort of the suggestions that I make, and they have to live with their bodies. So if they've got something that works for them, I'm not taking that away from them. Usually though, however, they'll be like, I am using this dressing and no, it doesn't work. It falls off, it leaks, it stings, it tears my skin. And yeah, I'll then go through and sort of ask these sort of very specific questions of, you know, is the skin around where it's draining? Is that getting sort of moisture damage? I will ask them to describe it to me if it's not. Usually when they see me, they're not, the lesions aren't active, because it's typical dermatology. Mm-hmm. Their skin clears up just before they come in. Yeah. So it's usually a lot of describing and very specific questions and, you know, describing moisture damage to them and asking, does it look like that? Are you getting these sort of red marks in the shape of the dressing? Quite a lot of patients have worked out that they can actually just turn the dressing slightly to try and solve the sort of the repetitive skin damage from adhesives. But yeah, I will spend a lot of time asking. And as I say, quite often when they see me, they haven't got actually anything active to show me. even if they have got something active, often these patients are quite traumatized from previous appointments where they've had maybe someone a bit overeager poking quite aggressively at their lesions, causing them pain. So I will always ask, do you actually want me to see any? Some of them do, some of them are like, yep, absolutely, strip off, show me all their lesions. Some of them are embarrassed. It's really intimate areas. They don't really want to show me. They might show me a little bit of like one, usually in the armpit, but the ones in the groins, often they're not comfortable doing that on that first appointment.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to force them. Like it must be horrible. So we will use a lot of describing. I will often show them pictures and we will just have a long sort of chat. And I said in the talk, I will always try and do for my first appointment, an hour long appointment if I can. Because it takes time to really dig into what exactly is going on and what the issues are. And obviously we know that the lesions can be at different stages and they can have multiple different types of lesions in the armpits and the sort of the groins and the buttocks. So even when I do suggest a dressing, I won't necessarily suggest the same thing for all the areas. I think that's sort of how I do the sort of the assessment side of things.
Yeah, it can be really tricky, can't it? Because like you say, these lesions and are in usually delicate areas and really tricky areas, you know, the axilla, the groins, and, you know, trying to get dressings to actually fit or stick is sometimes near impossible, you know, with limited resources. And often, you know, dressings are square dressings and, you know, not applicable for these areas. So it can be really tricky. And I think having somebody so specialised like yourself can make a huge difference. So, Faye, could you talk us through some of the dressings that you would possibly would suggest for patients and the areas you would suggest them for?
Obviously there are 5,000 different dressings.
Yes.
But typically I tend to sort of see it as sort of your three stages. You've got sort of low exudate, moderate exudate, and sort of high exudate. The low exudate ones tend to be those sort of early lesions that are they haven't erupted yet. They're not sort of quite doing anything, but they are incredibly painful. At that point, I'll often suggest patients just, you know, clindamycin gel if that works for them, lidocaine to help with the pain. Duoderm has been quite a useful one for some people. Mm-hmm. Because obviously as that skin is stretching and becoming quite taut, it becomes really tender and sensitive. The duoderm kind of acts as that sort of second skin and protects it from friction. Obviously a lot of patients can react to duoderm and there are sort of alternative hydrocolloid dressings. But I quite like the hydrocolloids because you can obviously cut them to shape, as you say. These sort of dressings come as squares. People aren't square. But the duoderm and things, they can be cut to sort of specific shapes, and I will always teach the patients to cut curves into it rather than doing like sharp angles, because sharp angles tend to peel more easily. But the hydrocolloids are good because they will also form a gel. So if any does leak out, it will then form a gel, which can help with the sort of kickstart the healing process. And these are sort of the same things that you would use for the acne plasters that have become quite popular. They're just hydrocolloid dressings in cute shapes, but it's the same sort of principle where it will then draw out if there is anything, then form that gel and sort of help with the healing. But other than that, the sort of the 365, the Mepilex, the Mefix borders, the Hyperfix, sort of these non-woven island dressings, a lot of patients I meet are usually using these. And they will say, yeah, it works for the sort of the early stages, low exudate. Even though they can be quite rubbish, I don't throw them out completely because for some people, they work really well. They are incredibly cheap, so obviously easy to get hold of, and they stick quite well. I will always then recommend patients use either get in the shower to take them off or use an adhesive remover spray, because these can sort of traumatise the skin quite a lot. I think those are my sort of main go-to. What I'll always say to people is, obviously, as I said before, we've got 5 million different types of dressings. I will always recommend people have a look at their formulary to see what is available. And if they can get their hands on the dressings themselves and have a look at them, that will really help sort of visualise, could this work for this area? Then for the moderate sort of exudate, I like the silicone foam borders. I've had quite a few patients recently who've had sensitivity reactions to silicon, which is interesting because I thought it wasn't supposed to be sensitizing. But I don't know if there's something in the adhesive that they have to use with the silicon that is sensitizing people. So I'll always check with the patients if they're okay using silicon dressings. But the silicon foam borders for most people are incredibly gentle on the skin. They feel off really nicely. The foam is obviously very absorbent, which is what we want. Some patients, it won't stick to them as well. I don't know why. Some people just don't have very sticky skin. So, again, it's one of those sort of trial and error ones. And another good one that's quite good is the ones that don't have a border. So Neplex XT, which is Neplex Up now. And then there's Aquacel foam adhesive. The whole thing itself is sticky, which again, you can cut to shape, which is brilliant. So what I'll often do is ask for a bigger size that the patient can then cut up to fit and shape wherever they need it in these sort of very specific areas. And again, some patients that will stick to brilliantly. Some patients will immediately pop off. So it is trial and error, and it is getting that feedback and getting sort of seeing what's worked for them. And then for the high exudate, you've got your super absorbers, which will need to be stuck on with something. There are some super absorbers that have been released that have an adhesive on them, but I'm not convinced how well they would stick. I've not tested them on myself yet, but they don't seem like they would stick. But give it a go. Again, it's, you know, you experiment, you sort of be honest with your patient, and if you've got some, get them to try it and sort of see if this works for you. But obviously these will need to be stuck on. Finding the perfect dressing or perfect thing to fix these dressings on with is difficult. Hyperfix is okay, it stretches with the skin, it sticks quite nicely, but again, it can be quite traumatic coming off. Something I came up with just before the BDNG that I sort of mentioned but I've never tried is silicon tape or the sort of the scar sheets, because these can be removed and washed and reused. So from a sort of cost saving point of view, potentially, actually, if you're reusing the same bit of tape over a week, that might be cheaper than getting a roll of Hyperfix, say. The silicon, obviously, for most people is more delicate on the skin. So, if anyone out there wants to try that and let me know how it goes, that'd be great. because I can't really justify the cost of trying it, but I want to. So that's potentially an option. And then you can get sort of a bit creative with it. Obviously, I said it before, I wanted to work in burns, so I did sort of have some worked in burns for a bit. And we would use, obviously, we need to do full body dressings, and we'd use the sort of the netting, surgical netting tubes. And we would make essentially garments out of that. And I'm sure anyone who's worked in dermatology dressings knows better than I do how to do that. And that's potentially an option. You can cut sort of big holes in. But again, that could be quite warm. It could be quite uncomfortable underneath clothes. And the same with sort of bandages. These can sort of ride up and they can get quite warm underneath. But it's whatever your patient would find sort of acceptable. And this is where it really comes in, having that sort of collaborative working. And then obviously there's also HydraWear, which some patients, brilliant, it works. Some patients have been so disappointed. They've had someone come in and be like, this is the dressing that will save you. This is, this is the one to go for. After this, there's nothing else. Then they've tried it, it hasn't worked for them, and they've been absolutely heartbroken because they think there's nothing else.
That's hard,
so yeah, absolutely try HydraWear, recommend it, but don't get the hopes up too much, because for some people it just isn't it.
It's a good tip, that, because people do, you know, say these things to patients, and it, you know, like you say, if you give them all the hope in the world and then it doesn't actually work, where do you go from there? Yeah. So it can be really tricky. So that's a really good tip for our listeners today as well. You've given some really concise, you know, advice there, and on the different levels of exudate as well, which is really, really helpful for our listeners today. Do you have, when you come in, have you got a selection of these dressings in your clinic, or how does it work? Or do you have to prescribe them through your GP, or, you know, how do you get access to the dressings?
So I work at three different sites.
Oh,
So yeah,
wow.
I don't really have I'm a guest basically at two of the sites. And then we've got our sort of our home base in central Edinburgh. The home base is obviously much easier, but our dressing selection isn't massive. Then the two other sites I'm borrowing from the community treatment room and the plastics dressings clinics. So I've got to know the ladies who work there quite well, and I will ask very, very nicely. I do try and source my own when I can. But at each site, I do have my sort of my box of tricks, where I have hydro air samples. I will have then just a variety of different dressings that we will then, well, I'll open them up. We'll have a look at them. I will sort of show them, this is what it looks like. This is how it feels. If they're not sure whether they've had silicone or not before, and if they're sort of having a reaction to it, I will get them to have a feel and be like, does this look similar? But I rarely will send them away with dressings. I will sometimes send them away with a couple of different ones for them to try at home to see what they prefer. But then I will write my letter to the GP where I will outline. I'll also write my letter to the patients. They've got a list of what we've discussed because it's, as I say, it's an hour long session often, and it's a lot to remember. So the top of my letter, I will write requested GP actions in bold. And then I will have a bullet pointed list underneath of please prescribe the following. And it is usually, the antibiotics, the topicals, and then I will have my dressings. And because I send my patients away with a few different ones, it will often then be a list of options and then please prescribe the one the patient requests. And I will then specifically tell my patient, try these. If you like one of them, if one of them works for you need to contact your GP. Your GP isn't going to chase you for this. You need to
You need
contact
to
your GP and
contact them.
request this. And I will be very, very precise in I want this dressing, this size, this shape. I will copy and paste often from the formulary so that they've got exactly what they need to look for. Sometimes I will get emails from GPs saying no, or I can't, or any sort of these issues. I love it when they email me because I can then email back and sort of say, yeah, get it. However, try this, sort of we can then sort of troubleshoot. I will also tell my patients that if they have any issues, to let me know, because I can also then send a follow-up email to the GP explaining the importance of having these dressings, having access to them. And I have offered to do teaching every time I've had to do this,
Brilliant.
because I know that HS isn't very well known about it, isn't taught in medical training. Dermatology is under-taught at medical school, we know this. So yeah, I completely don't blame them for not understanding what I'm asking or why I'm asking it. So I will offer to do training. No one's taken me up on the offer yet, but I will keep offering. I am actually doing some training for some AMPs later.
Oh,
So
fabulous.
I'm getting there.
That's great. I mean, just to have that education as well, it makes such a difference, doesn't it? And yeah, it sounds like you're really working with the patient, but also with the GPs, which, we all get backlash as well because, it's impossible for GPs to have everything and know everything as well. But it sounds like you're really in a collaborative, relationship with the patient, the focus, and then the GP as well, which is really, really positive. Do you get an hour for every HS patient? Is that how it works, or is that when you first see them?
So it's only usually the first session. Usually follow-ups are then just sort of how are you getting on, doing any troubleshooting, sort of a bit of a discussion. I don't always get there for the first one. As I say, I'm trying to redirect all the HS patients to me. If I notice I'm
Good.
getting one and I've not met them before, I will then often block out the session afterwards. But yeah, it doesn't always happen.
But it's really, I mean, like you say, you've got the drive there and the passion, for HS, and I think definitely the knowledge as well. So, to have a specialised clinic would be fantastic. And I think there's up and down the country, there's definitely more and more, of these HS clinics being nurse-led as well, which is really positive. You just didn't see that a few years ago. They're usually linked onto the biologic clinic, and you were lucky if you saw one. So I think it's really positive now that, we're taking the sort of lead in these as well. But you've gone through, all the various dressings and, how you would assess and work in partnership as well. Is there any sort of key tips you would like to say to our listeners before we close this podcast today, Faye?
Oh gosh, that's a big question. Yeah, I think the most important thing I think is assess what your patient understands of their disease is the first, is my sort of always my first bit, because you get some patients who think they've got a chronic infection, which breaks my heart. They will then scrub themselves raw with very harsh cleaning products. Often they are recommended to use things like heavy scrub, which they'll then use, end up using sort of twice a day. When that's not appropriate, it is traumatizing to the skin, which is already traumatized. So I think start by making sure your patient understands that this is an autoinflammatory condition. This is not their fault, and this has nothing to do with hygiene or an infection. And on that, I think it's also important to make sure your patients understand that sort of the stuff coming out isn't necessarily sort of a sign of infection. As you said before, you know, smell is often a big concern for patients. I will always try and reassure them that that smell is often personal to them.
Yeah.
And it's really hard with that sort of, I had it in plastic surgery as well. You know, I've had it everywhere I've worked with wounds where people don't like the smell of their wound. They think it smells bad.
Yeah.
But clinically you smell it and you're like, no, it's fine. Like it doesn't, it's just a wound smell. Which I think I had a patient recently describe it as, it just smells, everything smells like ham, which on its own, ham doesn't smell bad. Ham just, it smells like ham.
Yeah.
But if your clothes and your bed and your room and your car and everything smells of ham, of course you'd go mad. But it's not a sign of infection. And I think it can be some quite sort of powerful for patients to be told that smell is, yes, it is distressing for you, but actually it's not a bad smell. It's not, you know, a sign of anything bad happening. The stuff that's coming out will often describe what the actually infected sort of pus looks like. And then what they've got is usually just white blood cells, plasma. It's just bits of your body, essentially, that are coming out, because the alternative is they sit under your skin and hurt. So it's good that they're coming out, and actually it means it's cleaning the area. Because, yeah, again, like I've had a few patients who think that it's disgusting that it's coming out and that it's, a you know, sort of something terrible's happening. And it's actually, no, it's good because it's flushing everything out. So if there are any bacteria in there, actually your body's doing a great job of flushing out anything that might be in there. And we just need to find a dressing to absorb that.
That's great to be so positive with the patient as well. A good way of explaining it, actually, just, you know, to flush it all out. Because you do get that, you don't, you do get patients in that are embarrassed. And also the partners as well. I find that the partners, you know, struggle with sometimes the odour, you know, because they feel the house and, you know, the room is, you know, has this odour. And I think it's, you have to sometimes work with the partners as well and not just the patient, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think of all the sort of the inflammatory conditions I work with, I feel like HS patients and partners are the most sort of robust and hardy people you'll ever meet. That, you know, I guess because they have to be. But yeah, quite often the partners I meet are really sort of caring and impressive people.
Yeah. It's so impressive, isn't it? You know, the patients that you meet, and like you say, they're so, you know, smiley and positive, and, you know, you're like, gosh, you're going through all this, and it's, you know, it's so difficult. And that's why I love doing my HS clinics as well, because, you know, you get to know the people and it's really positive. Yeah. And you know, even though you sometimes have got limitations, well, we've all got limitations, but I think because you know, can even signpost, like even to the HS support network, that makes a big difference to patients. And quite often on that HS support network as well, they have little sessions with, which is only the patients, not clinicians, but where they do the dressing thing and they discuss dressings. And quite often if I'm lost, I'll be like, why don't you go on to the HS support network and discuss this? Because people come up with things that I'd never heard of, you know, so it's really, you know,
absolutely,
it's a good thing to signpost to. Yeah, well, we could chat all day, definitely, say on this one, definitely. And, you know, the BDNG are really trying to focus on HS as well. We're planning an HS speciality day in June. I think it's June the 8th in 2026, which is hard to believe. And we're hoping that Faye will be joining us on that day as well. We have an HS support group as well, an HS, sorry, subgroup that is very active, and we really try to promote HS and really just work with the resources that we have, which can be limited, and, you know, treat these people as individuals, you know, acknowledge that they've probably been waiting 10 years to even see you. And, you know, it's not easy sometimes. And yeah, they're so, you know, so strong and so positive sometimes it takes your breath away. But I thank you so much, Faye, for all your knowledge today. Really appreciate it. And I know our listeners will really, really be, it's such a valuable topic. And thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.